Now, one of the things that I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be making an MP3 of this presentation. And if any of you would like a copy of the MP3, just give me your business cards and I'll be glad to give it to you. If you don't have a copy of the slides, just write down that you want a copy of the slides and I'll be glad to give you the MP3 and the slides. In addition, this is... I'll make you an offer. I'm willing to talk with you by phone for an hour after this program. So if you want to, if there's some ideas here that you would like to turn to action, I'm available to you for up to an hour. These are the kinds of issues that we are going to be discussing. How to do differential diagnosis of workplace relationships and its impact for your careers, and how you can manage your careers more effectively, how you can manage your work relationships more effectively. We're going to spend a lot of time on the concept of chumship. And the question is, why should you care? What difference does it make to you? We do a lot of work with... Hi, welcome. We do a lot of work with knowledge, senior level knowledge workers. So we work with 12 of the largest 15 law firms, 70% of the largest 20 healthcare services, organizations. We work with top tier private equity companies, State Street. We've worked with Kronos. So we're used to dealing with very smart people who are very smart knowledge workers. And that means the core of their job is analyzing information, interpreting information, then making decisions on information. This is, knowledge workers is a term coined by Peter Drucker in the 1960s. And people who are engaged in knowledge work have been trained to pay particular attention to the importance of proper diagnosis. So, for example, the most extreme example would be your obstetrician. Your obstetrician is not going to do anything unless there's a diagnosis first. So the first step is a diagnosis. On the other hand, we saw a number of people out there in the booths. They have particular approaches to the management of money so that you can make a diagnosis that my clients need someone who does value-based equity investing, long-term, not trading. You can make those decisions. So we're very into differential diagnosis in the technical sphere. When it comes time to work relationships, most people don't give a shit. Not only do they not give a shit, they don't have a language to discuss it. And because there's no language to discuss it, how can you have a conversation with other people about what needs to be done? And so the purpose of this talk is, how do you differentially diagnose workplace relationships? How do you create a language to have a discussion about those relationships? And then finally, how do you make money off those relationships? I'm going to give you an example of what I mean. We work with 5 of the largest 7 institutions of higher education in Boston. I'll name a university, but I won't, let's call it Ivy League University. And Ivy League, and I'm going to say I'm working for the Department of Civil Engineering in this Ivy League university. And the way to, any of you from university environments or work with university environments, the way to look at a university is these are groups of entrepreneurs called professors. And when they get grants, they're funded and they're profit centers for the university. When they don't get grants, they're loss centers for the university. So this one professor has got $20 million grant. He's so important for the university, there's a lab named after him, the Smith Lab. He's so important, there's an entire floor of a building just for his work. He's so important that students from all over the world come to study under him for their PhDs. Now, he has determined that the chairman of his department is an enemy. And he uses that word enemy. And what happens is he has basically split the department into, are you for the chairman or are you for me? Because you can't be for both. What's it going to be? And even the graduate students, who really have nothing to do with the politics of the place, are caught up in this, are you for my enemy or are you for me? So this was the situation that we were in, and we were asked to go in, can we create a situation where the department can function in a more appropriate way? So I'm working with Professor Smith. And I'm saying, you've called the chairman of the department an enemy. What is the evidence that he is an enemy? So he tells me what the evidence is that he's an enemy. I said, you know, it doesn't sound like he's an enemy. It sounds, in my framework, it sounds like he's an adversary. And an enemy is somebody who wants you dead or wants you out. There's nothing that you can do. An adversary is to somebody that opposes you on a particular matter, but an adversary could also be an ally on another matter. I then talked to the chairman of the department. I said, is there anything coming up that Professor Smith is going to suggest that you actually agree with? He says, yeah, we all agree that there are not enough women in the ranks of the faculty. Professor Smith has an idea that he's going to be bringing up at the next faculty meeting. I said, great. I go back to Professor Smith. I said, all right, why don't we test this out? At the next faculty meeting, why don't you bring up your idea about increasing the percentage of women on the faculty and see what the chairman says? If the chairman opposes the idea simply because it was your idea, then it's true he's an enemy. If the chairman accepts the idea, is willing to work with you on it, he's not an enemy, he's an adversary. So Professor Smith proposes the idea. The chairman says, it's a great idea. I'll work with you on the idea. They're working together on the idea. So now Professor Smith is beginning to change his verbalizations about the chairman from enemy to adversary. As he changes the verbalizations, the emotional tone of the department starts dropping. So this is a cognitive behavioral intervention. Those who are in Treasury sometimes get very involved in inwardly facing jobs. Some of you in Treasury are externally facing. But there may be missed opportunities to enrich your careers, to manage work-life tension, and we're going to be talking about that too. The idea, another idea that we're going to be discussing is the concept of what is a rainmaker in an organization. A place like State Street has people that are rainmakers, people who are just very good at building businesses. Lawyers have people that are called rainmakers. And one of the things that one needs to do in business development today is to substitute rainmakers for multiple chumship relationships. This is a picture of Gulliver, who's been trapped not by one relationship, but by multiple relationships, many thin strands as opposed to one thick strands. And we'll be talking about the concept of chumship. How many of you are from Boston area? How many of you remember the firm Testa Hurwitz? Just two? Okay, well, Testa Hurwitz was a fabulous firm with a great reputation for doing legal work, particularly with high-tech companies. And Dick Testa was the rainmaker. He had a fabulous reputation. Everything revolved around Dick Testa. The problem was, once Dick Testa died, the entire firm collapsed. And the firm is no more. And again, firm survival depends upon creating many people who know how to develop chumships rather than dependency on just one. Again, part of the importance of what we're going to be talking about is the importance of having a language that can be shared with others to talk about these. Because if you can't talk about it, if there's no common language to talk about it, then you can't do anything about it. This is the matrix for relationships, and there's six categories, and we'll talk about each of the categories. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to define the categories, and I'm going to ask you to take out a piece of paper. And as we talk about the relationships, I'd like you to name one person that is in each category. But this is only for you. I'm not going to ask you to discuss this with others. This is your classic Harvard Business Review matrix table. There's two categories here. Is the relationship conditional, or is the relationship unconditional? What I mean by that is, a conditional relationship is, if you do this for me, then I'll do this for you. That's conditional. The things we do are conditional. On the other hand, you have certain unconditional relationships in your life, probably your children, where you love your children almost despite what they do, no matter what they do. Hopefully you have spouses that you feel that way. You know, it doesn't matter what they do, you still love them. Those are unconditional relationships. And the next thing is, what's the outcome? Is it positive, neutral, or negative? So let's first look at colleagues. And again, a colleague is, it's a neutral outcome. It could be good, it could be bad, you don't particularly care. And there's no affect at all. It's not positive, it's not negative, you don't expect it. Basically, a colleague is somebody who occupies the same space that you do. That you see them in the elevator in the morning, and you say hello. You may be in the same room with a person. You don't go out of your way to help them. You don't go out of your way to hurt them. But they occupy a similar space that you do. And you call them colleagues. So that's the word for them. So I'd like you to think about someone in your professional life that you would call a colleague. Just put down the name. And again, this is just for you. I'm not going to ask you to. In this picture, these are two mothers. They just happen to be at the same schoolyard at the same time. They're doing something on some play schedule. If it works out, fine. If it doesn't work out, fine. They're just there. That's a colleague. The next is friends. Now, this is a term, the word. You could see I'm very big on the use of language, because how we say things affects how we think about things. How we think about things affects how we act. And in America, we use the word friends in a very loose way. Everybody's my friend. Everybody's on a first name basis with me. You know, Jay's my friend. And it doesn't mean anything. In China, anybody from China? You know. Okay, China has lots of gradations. I learned that Mao Zedong had like six different names for people who knew him at different levels. So there's a much more formal way. The Germans, the French, they have a more gradation about formality. But in America, everybody's a friend. And so we use the word friend in a very sloppy way. So I'm going to define the word friend in a very clear way. A friend is someone who would be very upset to find out if you died, that you were dead. They might even cry. A friend is someone who you have an unconditionally positive relationship with. So, for example, I have somebody that I've known since I was 10 years old. And I think we may talk to each other maybe once every 3 years. And When my daughter needed a guarantor on a loan for an apartment that she wanted to get in New York City, I called my friend that I hadn't seen in 3 years. Would he sign the document? I expected him to say, of course, and he said, of course. And you know what? If he said, I can't do it, it probably wouldn't have changed the relationship either. That is what I would call a friend. It's an unconditional relationship. Now, take out a piece of paper and write down the name of a friend who meets that criteria.
Not at work, just
at work.
At work.
A work friend.
Work. Well, this is about work. Now, I hope you're having trouble. Because that's not the nature of work. It's about conditional relationships. And I think Harry Truman really said it succinctly. He said, if you're in the White House and you want a friend, get a dog. And one of the things that I see where people really screw themselves up is they diagnose someone as, this is my friend. And then it turns out the friend does something that's against your interests. Well, when you diagnose somebody as a friend and then the friend goes against your interests, you are then apt to use the word betray. Right? Doesn't that follow? Once you then use the word betray, you've now cognitively set yourself on a revenge mode, right? Because betrayal is a very emotional, negative emotional thing, and it calls for revenge. So be very careful. You should have no names on your... And if you do, it should be a real special relationship. And this is a particular problem with Americans, where they use the word friends too promiscuously, and then they feel betrayed by the friend, and then they got to get even with the friend, and now you start circling the drain. Interesting enough, in my model of unconditionality, enemies are the same as friends. If friendship, real friendship, is it's an unconditional positive regard no matter what you do. An enemy is an unconditional hatred no matter what you do. With a true enemy, you really cannot stop that person being an enemy. So it's an unconditional. Think about somebody in your organization that you consider to be, I'm not going to call on you, but think of somebody that you consider to be an enemy. I've had one.
Anyone I've ever considered an enemy is dead, and I didn't have anything.
Yeah, they you know what? They all say that.
Living well is the best
way. So think of somebody who is an enemy. Particularly at work, okay? Now, the next is a very adversaries. And adversaries, again, now we're on the, using the matrix before, we were here on the unconditional, now we're on the conditional side. And an adversary it's a conditional relationship. And there's usually a negative outcome. In order for me to win, you have to lose. The example of adversaries that I love is when I see professional hockey played. And while they're on the ice, they beat the shit out of each other. They call each other names. And then after they get out of the locker, they go to dinner with each other. To me, I don't understand that. How can you hurt somebody and then go out with that person for dinner? It's the job, that, and they don't.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, in terms of, is that something, when you think of like bullying, you know, like guys tend to, boys just kind of like tend to hit each other and move on, where girls get into this.
Yeah, well, again, I think it's, again, you're using a guy versus a girl thing. I'm trying not to go there because that's very dangerous for me. But in my terminology, it's the issue of, is the person an adversary or is the person an enemy? So if the person, whether it's a girl or boy, is saying these negative bullying things about me, and I see this person as an enemy, then I must get rid of them, or I must leave, because it's dangerous. If the person is an adversary, it's clear there could be situations where we could be allies in other situations. So you can be adversaries, you can be allies with the same people under the same situations. So again, you see this often in financial services, where people who are competing with each other, against each other in business, will go out for dinner with each other and enjoy each other's company. And they will say very negative things, or they'll imply kind of snarky things about the other person's company, but they actually like each other. And I'm sure you've all had that situation.
Rival could be another word for
adversary. A rival is another word. But it's adversaries and allies, it's a very, you know, our relationship with China. Is China a friend? No, not. The United Kingdom and the U.S. relationship would be today very much like a friend. You know, we're so together on so many things. The relationship between the United States and China is much more allies and adversaries. We can be together on certain issues. We can be opposed to each other on other issues. It's perfectly fine. We're that way with the French, right? We're not allies. You know, we're not friends with the French. My God. You know, but we're allies and we're adversaries at the same time. Yeah. It's a very fluid thing. So when you call, again, my intervention with the university was to get the professor to agree this is not an enemy, but an adversary. Once he began a thought pattern of adversary, then there was a more fluid than adversaries can also be allies. Does that make sense? So think about somebody who's an adversary, either in work or a competitor, in business. Write that down. Again, the allies are the exact opposite. That for mutual gain, under certain circumstances, we are going to work together for a common purpose. It doesn't necessarily mean we like each other. But there's mutual, again, it's a conditional relationship. There's advantage for me, there's advantage for you. We don't have to like each other to work together. So those are allies. Think about somebody who is an ally at work. Not necessarily somebody that you enjoy being with. And then finally, it's chums. And a chum is an ally with benefits. A chum is somebody that you have a conditional, not an unconditional relationship. It's not a friend. It's not friends. It's a conditional relationship. You are allies in that you're doing things for mutual benefit, but you enjoy being with this person. But because they're not friends, and because they're allies, you understand that person could turn on you and do things against your benefit, and that's okay. That's the nature of the relationship. And you wouldn't use the word betrayal. You know, for example, I've had, I worked with Mark Ain for a number of years. I liked working for Mark, and then one day, Kronos was no longer a client. Did I think Mark betrayed me? No. He moved on. He moved on with somebody else. It probably ruined my afternoon, but it didn't ruin my life. And it didn't make me feel any less about Mark than I did before. So I never thought of him as an enemy. Never thought of him as a friend. He was doing things in his own interests. And that's fine. Think about some. So write down someone in your life who is an a chum.
This is at work.
At work. Any questions about these categories? Any reactions? Does this make sense? So let's now we get very practical and we'll talk about chums and the management of chums and why you should think about your career and your leadership in terms of the management, the cultivation, and the growth of chumship. There's a mythology that it's lonely at the top. No, that's not true. It's very crowded at the top, but it's full of chums. And that's okay. Chums give a lot of spice and warmth and zest in life. And chums are fun to be around. As long as you understand they're chums, they're not friends. If you start confusing chumship and friendship, then you're going to get really disappointed. It's important to keep those two categories in mind. But it's not lonely at the top. It's full of chums. And people who know how to engage in chumships know how to make money. They know how to get other companies interested in working with your company. And again, in certain industries, they're called rainmakers. The other thing about chumship, it begins to put your life on a three-legged stool as opposed to a two-legged stool. A lot of the literature on managing your professional life talks about work-life balance. How do you manage work-life balance? Well, the answer is you can't. It's very hard to do. But if you think about a stool with three legs, that is more stable than a stool with two legs. And I'm positing today you begin to think about work, chumship, and then your personal life. And I'll give you some examples. I'm working with a CPA firm. And the partner that I'm working with loves golf. Loves golf. Plays golf as often as he can. And because he's kind of a cheap guy, he plays at the public golf course. And what I've done is we've researched his area of expertise is private equity companies. And so we've done some research to identify where are the golf clubs where private equity partners are most likely to play golf. And there's a golf course in Weston where there's a whole bunch of private equity people. And so what we've done is gotten the partnerships to authorize my client to join the Weston Golf Club on condition that he also join the marketing membership committee of the golf club once he becomes a member. Because then his job is to meet other members of the club who love to play golf, which he likes to play. So the idea is spend time with people who have the same passions that you do, but understand these are chums. And you're trying to cultivate chums for the benefit of the organization. That makes him more valuable, it's a way of investing. Typically what this firm would have done in the past is we like you, we love you, we see you as a we're gonna spend $40,000 and have you get a certificate at the Harvard Business School. And what I have them do is to spend significantly less money for a membership at the Weston Golf Club.
How much money did that run?
No, we're still working on that. Some people like wine. Well, that's great. If you like wine, why don't you go to formal wine tastings? Why don't you invite chums to join you at these wine tastings? Again, this is a way of taking work-life balance pressure and then having a safety. Can anybody think of any other things in their lives that might be comparable? This is why this is called the courtyard. This is a picture that I took in Madrid. I was on the street, and this door was open. And look at this lovely little courtyard. It's right here. It's not very big, but it's very nice, very peaceful. And this is the inner sanctum of the private residence. Courtyards are very important in life. And there are two kinds of courtyards, physical courtyards and virtual courtyards. And chumship is conducted in courtyards. Chumship is conducted in courtyards. It's not conducted in your office. It's conducted in courtyards. Here's another courtyard. A nice courtyard moderates the mood before you enter the private space. It calms you down before you enter the private space, much like this. This is a nice walkway into the private space. Here's another version of courtyards. It's a space that is not work, nor is it personal. It's somewhat in the middle. In Paris, the courtyards often are cafes and bars where people meet. It's not work, it's not home, it's a separate space. In the 19th century, many United States homes had porches, and the porches would front Main Street, and people would sit on the porches on hot days with lemonade. And as people would pass by, they would say hello, they would engage in conversations. People could come up to the porch, have some lemonade, engage in conversation, and have a nice relationship, but you're not inviting them into your home. The porch is courtyard. How do you manage the courtyards in your life? Can you think about what are the courtyards in your life? Another purpose of courtyards is to moderate temperature before it reaches the private space. So for example, in that lovely picture in Madrid, it was very hot and warm. So the little courtyard kind of cools the air from the streets before it reaches the private space, much like this courtyard does. So what are business courtyards? In the United States, the most common courtyard is golf. And again, there are a lot of women in this room. I certainly would recommend for women that they learn how to play golf. I particularly don't like golf. I find it a very long, tiresome way to spend a day. But it is a great way of developing chums. So it is for business. There is a reason my daughter went to Stanford Business School. She had a course called golf. It's a one credit, pass-fail course. They taught her how to play golf. You do not graduate from Stanford Business School without learning how to play golf. The reason it is the emblem of the courtyard is that your people are stuck with you for 3 to 4 hours. And so you talk about all sorts of things. But how many of you play golf? Okay, so.
Thank God you didn't ask whether you played it well.
No. But it's interesting. In my experience with golf, there are certain conversations you do not get into. You do not get into very personal conversations. And the conversations tend to be channeled along a certain line. These are chumship relationships, not intimacy relationships. Would you agree with that?
I would.
So golf is the...
Golf with close personal friends.
That's different.
Which is different.
But if it's a business relationship, it's designed to cultivate chumship. You're not there for the sport. You're not there for the exercise. You're not there to enjoy yourself. Forget about it. That's not what this game is about. It's about your career. It's about the management of relationships. That's why people play golf. Some of you may love golf, that's fine. I don't, I still play it. Association committees is another way of developing chums. Again, these are people that you enjoy being with, that can advance your career, that helps you gain perspective, that helps you develop a reputation. For example, many of you are members of the Treasury Management Association of New England. Great, I hope you are. But don't just join. Get involved in a committee. As a matter of fact, the best committee for a student association would be an externally facing committee, as opposed to internally facing. You know, an internally facing committee would be the new constitution. You don't want to go there. An internally facing committee would be planning the Christmas party. Please don't go there. An externally facing committee, which is where you should go, would be the marketing membership committee, where your job is to reach out to other people in the association and get to know them. That's a good committee to be on. The program committee, where you get to meet other people from other organizations, that's where you meet chums. So join associations, join one. You don't have time to join five. Join one. Get involved on an externally facing committee. Yep.
I understand you're using chums, and I understand how you're using it. It seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're assiduously avoiding using networking as a term to describe what you're doing. Because I call what you're calling chumship networking, and I do it regularly, constantly, daily. Everyone I meet, I'm constantly networking, not for my own personal gain, but just to build those connections so that, you know who I am, I know who you are, and down the road we may do something together.
I think the difference is I don't have to like who I'm networking with. I can network with anybody. And often, again, the networking is almost by definition, it's going to be with strangers. Because it starts with networking. We meet, you and I don't know each other. We meet at the association. We're talking to each other. So the conversation is part of, it starts out as networking. Now, once we develop a relationship that we actually like each other and we could see mutual gain, now it's chumship.
Even before.
So it gets, chumship is much more personal. And networking is, I'll talk to anybody at a cocktail party. That's networking. I'm available to help anybody. That's networking. I like you, and I'd like to spend 3 hours with you playing golf. You play golf badly, I play golf badly. See, we got something in common. That's chumship.
Developing the
rapport. Much more, it takes it to the next level. Much more personal. So of course, there's a relationship between networking and chumship. But this is much more personal. The other thing is, I think you're coming at this from probably a more sophisticated stance than a lot of people that I know. And a lot of people that I know think, when they think of networking, they think, how can I extract value from this person? I'm looking for a job, so I'm going to network with you. And networking is, I'm going to try to suck information from you that's of value to me. And they often don't get the idea that effective networking has got to be two ways. Chumship is about a relationship. So it's different. Again, if you like wine, go to wine tastings. Bring people that you like. This, again, helps to diffuse some of the work-life tension. Now you've got a third area where you can do something that's good for your business, but it's also pleasing for you personally. Any questions? Now, let's get to the next level of chumship, the virtual. Chumship on the virtual world. There are people, and I have a particular view about the role of social media using this diagnostic framework and how to effectively employ social media as part of your corporate and individual tools. I look at Facebook and to the same degree Google Plus as the virtual courtyard. It is not personal, it is not private, but it's in right in the middle. LinkedIn, on the other hand, is clearly about business. How many of you are on LinkedIn? Okay, I mean that's business. That's your professional face.
Isn't that your professional courtyard? Hmm? Isn't that your professional courtyard?
I see Facebook as the professional as your professional courtyard. You don't necessarily would put things like. This morning I gave a talk at a country club and it had some beautiful ornate ceilings. And I asked about the history of the ceilings and they talked about the Italian immigrants who came over to do that. And I took pictures of it. I wouldn't put that on LinkedIn. That's not appropriate. I will put it on Facebook as something, it shows something about my value that I'm that I have an artistic side to me, that I appreciate the contribution of Italian immigrants to the Boston area, and here's an example of the great stuff that they did. It's a different side, it's a little more personal, but I wouldn't call it intimate. It's not, I think young people get in trouble when they think that Facebook is about friendship, the way I'm defining it, and they start talking about intimacies or showing pictures of themselves with soda straws stuck up at their nose or you know, just really dumb pictures of themselves that when a recruiter finds the picture, the recruiter's going to go, I don't think she fits in our organization. If you look at Facebook as this is the virtual courtyard, where if you're trying to cultivate chums, this is the place to do it. This is what you should write about. Things that are not intimate, but not necessarily just business. Somewhere in the middle, Facebook is a really good place for that. So from a virtual point of view, where do you put your professional stuff? What's going on? What's good for your resume? LinkedIn. Where do you put your intimate things? You do not put it on the internet. That's what you do. If you have something to say, you're going to call your real friends in the real world, in real time, face to face, or on a phone, and you're not going to do it on the internet, period. And again, that's kind of an issue that young people still have yet to get. But don't take the view that Facebook is useless. Facebook is the virtual place for cultivating chumships. Any of you think of examples? Or?
Well, I would agree with you that my uncle, who's a baby boomer, uses it exactly like you say. He owns his own company, but he'll post pictures he's taken, photos of him learning how to fly, kind of traveling, and playing the guitar like down with a band, you know, like stuff that makes him look interesting and everything like that. But anyone else I know, they're not kind of that. I think people, the younger generation, maybe don't use it like that. And I don't know if they just haven't caught up, or actually that they're using it properly.
At this point, many young people are not using it properly.
So,
but your uncle is using it exactly. So that this is
like all young people kind of are overshare and everything. Maybe that's just the way our society is going.
I think that's going to change. I think again we're looking at relatively new technology, and there's a lot to be learned. And where I'm coming from is in the area of relationship management, and I'm not just talking about if you're in sales. You still have to manage relationships even if you're a treasury manager. There's the professional side, which occurs in an office. There's the chumship side, which may occur outside an office. It could be a golf course. It could be at the theater. It could be at a wine table. It could be anything that you enjoy. And that chumship on a virtual basis can occur in Facebook. So an example of your uncle, what an interesting guy. He's a pilot. He plays guitar. So I'm learning some things about him that make him more interesting to me. And maybe I'd want to spend more time with him. And the more time with him, maybe the more business relationships we're going to have. That's really what that's for. It's not the place for intimacies.
Question. So, with that said, when I think of Facebook, I would never like Facebook colleagues, like send a friend request to a colleague. Mm-hmm. That's for LinkedIn. So how do you bridge that? You know, I see Facebook as a brag book for many adults.
Right.
You know, it's really, I don't think anybody really uses it. Probably, it's a randomness that...
I see a shift in it. I definitely see a shift. I think Facebook, when it first came out, replaced MySpace, which is why young people generally were oversharing on Facebook. And I think a lot of young people are in their own bubble anyway. You know, like, so they don't understand that something that they're putting out on Facebook has a greater consequence because they don't understand that in their own personal lives anyway. They're speeding and they get a speed ticket. It's not going to keep them from speeding. You know, like they're just kind of in their own world. But I do see more of a shift in Facebook. People are starting to recognize that it's being used for jobs, for censorship, to kind of rule people out. And I'm noticing a lot of multiple Facebook pages, mm-hmm. where you're having somebody who has a personal relationship, and then you have that Facebook page, and then you have a professional Facebook page, which is more for colleagues.
There's a company that I think is using Facebook in a brilliant, brilliant way. It's a company that sells uniforms, based in Quincy, Massachusetts. And one of the lines of uniforms are nurses and dental hygienists' smocks. And they created a Facebook page called Scrubology, which is what they're selling is scrubs. And it's become a place for people who are in the healthcare field, who are women, who are not doctors, to talk about scrub fashion, number one, and then it gets into office relationships. Now, I'm not talking about intimacies, but how do you manage a difficult colleague here, or how do you do something there? People don't, in Scrubology, don't talk about their personal lives, but they're confining it to their professional lives. And Scrubology now is like helping this group of healthcare professionals better manage their lives and also look good while you're doing it. So I think they've been very cool about what they're doing. And they're carving in the space for this is where these are not friends. It's a place where chums can congregate on a virtual basis.
One thing to remember about Facebook is there's a movement, a tendency in business to start requiring new applicants to turn over their Facebook passwords.
Yes.
So you need to be very, very, very careful about about what you put up, or what if you put up something critical about your employer, your employer finds out, they could demand that you provide that password so that they could see what you did, or they can fire you. So it's important to manage that courtyard very carefully.
It is a courtyard. It's a space between the personal and the public, but is still visible to others.
I still think that it's kind of taken over by the business world, maybe a little bit. I think that, I mean, it was originally created for college students, right. Young people, right? So I think the young people will just migrate somewhere else.
Absolutely. That's the nature of this technology. It's very fluid. It's also the nature of the decision. Once the decision was made that we're going to be a public company, you're going to be going down a certain road. You have to. But that's okay. It's just the nature. It's the nature of it. The issue for you is, how do you manage the virtual courtyard, and at least for today, and ignoring it, I don't think is a good idea.
I don't put anything on Facebook that I wouldn't want anyone to see,
right.
Bruins game, or that kind of stuff. But I was always under the impression that you don't friend colleagues, or all my stuff is private. So if someone is looking for me, that a banker that I met at TME or someone. They're not going to see anything that I don't want them to see. But I guess maybe now I'm thinking I should, because it's not anything that I wouldn't want
them to see. I think, with all due respect, I think you're naive.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think privacy on the internet is...
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it in terms of that. I'm saying I don't post pictures that have that privacy. I know people can see it if they really searched for it, but it's not something that I'm putting out there that's easily accessible, and it's not anything I would want.
It's not. Well, let me amend that. It's not easily accessible to you, and to people that you know.
Right. So I guess I'm saying is, if I wanted someone, a banker that I met here that had looked, had Googled me, so my profile comes up immediately. It's not available that they see that I went to a Red Sox game.
Well, I think the difference is the networking versus chumship. Because when you're here and you're with a bank, you meet somebody, you're more networking, but you haven't entered into the chumship where, I have people that I wouldn't necessarily call my friends. Like, I don't invite them over to my house, but they may have met my husband, we've gone out to dinner,
So people you work with, are you friends with on Facebook?
I'm friends with people who work with, or,
Again, you're using the word friends. And I'm at
Facebook
friends. Okay.
No, I know what you meant. But yes, there are people that have never been to my house, don't even know my address.
Right.
And they're my Facebook friends.
Yeah.
Because same thing. I don't have anything on there other than, I went to the beach and thank God I went, it was nice enough to go to the beach after this winter.
Let me give you a golf analogy. There's a tradition in golf that when you're with chums and somebody does a shot, you compliment them on the shot and you say, good shot. And if they miss, you're supposed to say, you almost got it. You were so close. And it would be an extraordinarily faux pas that if you just missed, for me to say to a chum, you jerk. You screwed that up. I wouldn't say that to a chum. I would say that to a friend, knowing it wouldn't mean anything. But to a chum, I would never say that. I would say, so close. You just missed it. And it's the same if you use Facebook as the courtyard analogy. Think about those things that are appropriate to say and pictures that are appropriate, assuming exactly what you said, that one day you're going to be looking for another job and your potential employer says, give me your password to your Facebook. Are you prepared for that?
I have, in the same sense, I haven't really gone to that mindset of colleagues, because I have people you go to high school and college with, they don't come to your house. you don't really know them that well, but you know of them and your friends on Facebook.
Yep.
But I don't do that with my colleagues, and now I'm starting to think, why wouldn't I?
I think that's why Facebook is also getting into the security. You'll see, notice changes in security, and I think the reason is because they recognize the shift.
Yeah.
So now, before your things can be added to your timeline, now you can switch the security so that you always have to approve it. Now you can have things that only you see, nobody else can see, you know, all of that.
The other thing I wanted to touch on is one of the things I'm very careful about on Facebook is I always lock down my Facebook page, and I do check my privacy settings, because for example, my wife and I are on vacation in Florida or at a Red Sox game or whatever, and I post that. Do I really want everybody on the internet to be able to know that I'm not at my house for some period of time, you know, because it'd be very easy to find out where I live and break into my house.
Yeah.
So it's not for friends, but don't ignore, you know, I think the important thing from a professional management point of view, don't ignore the virtual component of this. It's part of chumship management. And again, I would venture to say that what we're going to be seeing over the course of several years is enormous leaps in artificial intelligence, and that many of the things that you do today will be done by computers, and a lot of your intellectual abilities, there will be programs for that. And there are programs now for that, and it will continue. But computers can't form chumps, and this is about giving you an edge in your career. So let's summarize. Why is courtyard time important? Courtyard time is where you manage the chums in your life. The chums are those relationships, and again, not everybody is a chum. It's only those allies that you work with where you have a personal liking for. And there are lots of people in your business life who are allies that you don't necessarily have to like, but you can still work with them. They're not chums. Chums give spice to life. The good employees, good leaders know how to attract and retain chums. For most people in this room, you are not going to be, your careers will not go to the next level by proving yourself to be bright. You are already bright enough to get where you were, but proving yourself to be even brighter is not going to get you to the next level. It's relationship management, being known, and that other people know you, that's going to get to where you want to go. Again, the idea is changing the language from work-life balance to work-life courtyard balance, because courtyard can take some of the pressure away. You like to play golf, and you need to work. Well, here's a way that you can do both. You're a mother, you need to work. When I was a parent, I got involved in my religious education committee for my church, and I met several presidents of banks and got business that way. So I met people I enjoyed being, we shared the same values, it was work, it was not work, it was chumship. It helps take some of that work-life pressure away. Chums give zest to work. It also helps smooth the volatility of career management. The more chums that you make, the more people out there that know you. Again, you can easily be known in Boston, but how many people are going to have an emotional bond with you? Again, we're not talking about friendships. So something to think about. Monday's a holiday, but what are you going to do Tuesday morning? How are you going to implement some of these ideas? And again, if you want, I'll be glad to spend an hour with you on the phone if you want to take some of these ideas and put them into action. If any of you would like a copy of the PowerPoints or a copy of the MP3, give me your business cards. I'll be glad to to send them to you. Any questions, comments, concerns about this? For more information, I've written two articles in the MIT Sloan Management Review. These are links to those. If you send me your, give me your business cards and just type in MIT on the business cards, I'll be glad to send you the articles themselves. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the conference.